Welcome to No Church Answers, the weekly Christian podcast for men. We're not pastors, just regular guys looking to model positive Christian leadership in our work, families, church, and communities. Want to discover ways to apply scripture effectively in everyday life? Tired of the pat answers in Sunday school? Then settle in for a gritty, authentic, and unexpectedly funny Christian podcast. And now, No Church Answers.
And welcome to No Church Answers. This is a Christian roundtable discussion for men. This is podcast number 324. Hard to believe. And we're glad you're here. And where is here? Here is Sugar Land, Texas. So grab a globe, spin it around, boog. Not sure where you ended up, but spin it around, find Texas. Southeast side of Texas is Houston. Southwest side of Houston is Sugar Land, and that is where we are. You know, we're not pastors. We're just regular guys, each on our own spiritual journey, meeting daily challenges just like you. And we're glad that you've joined us for this spirited discussion. This podcast has been called Deliberately Provocative and Unexpectedly Funny, so we're so glad that you've checked us out. And our podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. We're on Facebook, YouTube, and at NoChurchAnswers.com, so please rate our podcast and leave a review. And of course, it wouldn't be possible without your encouragement and support. And with that, I'm going to jump right in and introduce the panel this week. He is a former world-class policy writer, a current professional gambler. He's also the show producer. It's Mr. Steve Titch.
Hello.
Hey, Steve.
Mr. Steve.
And back from being on assignment, he is a corporate trainer, kind of the group theologian, a big deal in talent development, which is kind of like industrial grade teacher. Welcome back to Professor Robert Koshu.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, Robert. And my name is Bill Cox. I'm basically a salesman and a host. We are still in a study called A Cry for Freedom, Grace That Is Still Amazing. It's a study of Galatians from GC2 Press. And I think this one lesson was written by one of our pastors here at Sugarland Baptist Church, Scotty Schwingler. So awesome. Looking forward to this. And start with Mr. Steve Titch.
Yeah, we're coming down to the end, and for these last few weeks, we're going to be talking about living in the Spirit, which Paul says is what Christ people should be doing rather than obsessing over the law or obsessing over whether they're circumcised or not. And this is going to begin the last chapter, chapter 6, and it's really when he talks about freedom and freedom from the law, and this is something we talked about last week. It's not in the freedom in the sense that most Americans understand it, the idea of self-fulfillment or independence. He specifically builds on two things, and they're two sides of the same coin. And we see him flip literally black back and forth in this reading of six of Galatians 6:1-10 between mutual accountability for each other and personal responsibility, which is why it seems right in the middle of this there's a contradiction. You'll hear it when we read it, but that's the key to understanding this, is that Paul is addressing two facets of living by the Spirit in community. And he says really it's all about living in community. It's not about going off and being the lone wolf and being free to do whatever you want. It's freedom to truly find sanctification through fellowship and through service. So that's my opening. I'll pass it over to Robert.
Excellent, Professor.
So this is really all about being a resurrection people, or one of the other guys I listen to a lot, he calls us followers of Christ. And I really like both terms. I really like resurrection people because we are people of the resurrection, as much as we are followers of Christ. And this is really what it boils down to, is how do I live my life in the path of following Christ? How do I interact with people? How do I adjust my attitudes? How do I adjust my thought processes? How do I live as a follower of Christ in a world that expects me to be the way they are? And in reality, we end up being the most countercultural. If we truly, truly, truly follow Christ and do the things we're called to do, we are the most countercultural. You can go have your hippie all day long and try telling me they're countercultural, and I'm going to tell you, yeah, no, go be a Christian in today's world. You know, be a follower, a true follower, not the guy that shows up on Sunday and does communion and takes up the offering, but be the guy who lives that faith out every day. That is where the rubber meets the road, and that's really where Paul starts to close out this letter at.
Excellent. And with that, I'm going to jump right in and read the scripture. It is Galatians 6, 1 through 10. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens in this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they're not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. For each one should carry their own load. Nevertheless, the one who receives instruction in the word should share all good things with their instructor. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Whoever sows to please their flesh from the flesh will reap destruction. Whoever sows to please the Spirit from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have the opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. Steve Titch.
Yeah, so like I said, this is this alternates between mutual accountability and personal responsibility right at the start. If someone is caught in sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. Gently, you know, bring them back in a non-judgmental way. And goodnesses, we've talked about that a lot.
I really want to talk about that.
But I do want to address this apparent contradiction, because all the skeptics are out there going, he says carry each other's burden in verse 2, and then he says everybody should carry their own load in verse 5. Oh, what are we going to make of that? That's, the first is an instance of mutual accountability, of support, of dealing, of working counterculturally in a social structure, being a neighbor, carrying a burden. At the end of the day, however, we will all be individually judged. And that line about each carrying their own load comes right after the idea of testing your own actions. And that's another thing. You really, as a Christian, you're not bound by the law, but you are following the Spirit. And that's when Paul, I think, I read it this way. When Paul is saying, test your actions, test them against what you know the Spirit wants from you. And be careful of blinding yourself there. Be careful of fooling yourself.
Oh, I want to back up a little bit. I do want to talk about the contradiction, because I really like it. But I want to talk about the gently for a moment, because Bill talks about training. I've been talking about coaching for 2 days straight now. Coaching like your manager, coaching your employee, that kind of coaching. And it's all about creating space for that employee to make good decisions when they made bad decisions. And I'm not talking about going and yelling and screaming at your employee and get this right, blah, blah, blah. Hey, John, I saw you do something. Let's talk about that. And what I see in a large stream of Christianity is the exact opposite of that. I see a lot of, you're a sinner, you're going to hell, you need to repent, blah, 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 blah. And that is a person who's hurting, who is reaching out and really struggling with something. There are things people struggle with. They don't need to that yelling, screaming, cursing, yelling, you know, live in the Spirit, not by flesh. You're living in flesh. You should repent. You need to, you know, they need a, hey, John, I saw something. We really need to talk. for a minute.
This is really...
Oh, go ahead. Oh, and part of the reason why, and I want you to finish your thought in a minute, but part of the reason why is one of the things I have seen over and over and over, and I'll give a shout out to him because I haven't done it in a while. The ex-evangelicals, their points about I've been abused, I've been mistreated, I've been this with the church, they're right about 55 to 65% of the time because they've experienced that part of the church who is extremely negative. And when you come after somebody like that, you in that manner, you have done more harm for the cause of Christ that you're trying to work on than anyone else. You know, that's not saying we don't call you out, we don't talk to you about it, but there is a way to do it.
And Paul really, Paul contramands that here, what you're talking
absolutely.
About. That. And he contramands it by saying, don't ever believe your sin is less than your neighbor's. Which is where, you know, where that comparison starts. So don't start comparing yourself. That leads to pride. But that's the idea. Oh, well, you know, I sin here and there. I know that. But it's nowhere near what you're doing.
Yeah,
and,
you know.
But I did want to add, go ahead, Bill.
Well, I was going to say that if you think of church as a club, it's the easiest club to get into. It's the hardest club to stay in.
Oh, that's a really good comparison.
And that is to me, the real stumbling block between being a freshman and a sophomore. When you're a freshman, you're welcomed in all your sins, all your warts and stuff. After you've been here a while and you're trying to open your wings in ministry, you open up and try to help someone with their boils and problems, and hey, look at yours. Oh, well, I forgot about mine. And that's the hardest thing, to go from step A to step B.
And what even makes this more difficult is really if we look at the context of this, we see that carry one another's burdens is you see a lot on church walls. But right here, this is talking the burdens Paul is talking about is our sin. Not well yes, we are to be charitable, we are to care about people, but like the situation he's addressing here is not a situation when Beth had cancer, we got you some gas cards, we helped you bear that burden because you of caregiving. That was what we do as Christians. That is not specifically what Paul is talking about here. Paul is talking about helping someone out of a sinful situation. And that might mean mean bearing the consequences of that, but it also means standing by them by admitting that he's just as fallen, he or she is just as fallen as I am. I'm not going to judge. I'm going to try to help as best as I can. And that's the same situation. Now, I'll bet, I'm going to 4 out of 5 ABFs and Bible studies and Sunday schools who did this lesson last Sunday ended up talking about giving gas cards to a guy who has to drive a lot to take his wife back and forth. that's because this dealing with the idea of how do I deal with a sinful person in my midst? It's hard. Because I think sometimes you really need deep friendships or deep relationships to do it.
Well, I think we also need to understand our lanes and what our capabilities are and understand what church is for. Church is for spiritual. There are so many things, burdens in life that aren't necessarily spiritual. There are financial, there are relationship issues that people have, and say what you want, not all of those are spiritual. They might affect your spirit, but the root of the problem is a financial or a relationship,
right?
Or some other kind of issue. And I had that in my Sunday school class just a couple of weeks ago. A guy came in, and obviously he was stressed. He's got issues, but I absolutely am unqualified to minister to those kind of issues that he has. You need to have real clarity in your mission. And I think so many times Christians are such good people that they want to help you do everything, you know? Hey, you need shingles? Yeah. You got a hammer? I'll crawl up on that roof. No, dude, you're not qualified for that kind of issue, you know? Well, and I think that's...
Exactly. But you can, I mean, if you want to use that analogy, you can help a guy, help him find the right repair guy or a decent roof guy or a good roof guy, not more than decent, a good roof guy, you know, but take that to the realm of sin. You can say, I'll take you to the pastor's office. I'll even sit with you in the pastor's office to just, you know, be there, not to just say anything, but to, you know, to show support or I'll wait outside, whatever. I will help you address this problem. Because I think, you know, part of the very fact that someone can come and, you know, it's a cliche, and admit they have a problem or admit they're sinning, especially if they're in a culture that says they're not. Oh, you know, porn's great. You know, it's you know, freedom of expression. It's okay to do that. You know, that it's there's not even that much shame associated with it anymore. Addiction. Or even, you know, I wonder about people who worked for Purdue Pharmaceuticals, which I've been reading a lot about lately. They're the ones who basically manufactured the opioid crisis.
They completely manufactured it.
Now, there were 5,000 employees in that company, and it was no secret as to what they were doing. What if someone, you know, someone's got to pay the mortgage, and they know they're working for a company that's out and out addicting people and denying it left and right. And how do you, I mean, that person maybe not directly involved in sin, but he knows this is something he can't do anything about. You can't sit there and go, oh, you know, just quit.
Well, yeah, no, and part of the problem is, and I'm going to recommend a couple of books. The first one is, not to look for the second one. The first one is Unchristian by Dave Kennan, and it's Unchristian, What a New Generation Really Thinks About Christianity, mm-hmm. and Why It Matters. And it was really based on a lot of stuff from the Barna Group. Mm-hmm. And in there, part of the conversation that book has is, you know, it talks about a single woman, and her statement was, I wish the guys would worry a lot more, the people in our church would worry a lot more about helping me raise my teenage son as a single mom mm-hmm. than the fact that I am a single mom. The other one is Unthinkable by David T. Johnston. And both of these books we read and were recommended by our former pastor. And that second one talks about what would the world look like if Christianity had never happened? And mm-hmm. We are, I'm not going to say we're past it. I'm not going to say we're there. But we are 100% in a post-Christian society where exactly what you said, Steve, you know, it's not looked upon badly that you watch porn. It's like, everybody does that. Who cares? It's not looked upon badly that you work for a company that's cheating and addicting people and lying about it because you got to make a living and the company's got a right to make money. As part of that, there has been a very much blurring of the lines of ethics and responsibility at a global corporate, whatever level you want to call it. And so what that's done is that creates a huge, and I'm going to use a big psychological term, cognitive dissonance within human beings, because we're trying to process what it means to live as Christ. But like you said, my problem is, you know what? Purdue Pharmaceuticals paying me a really nice salary for me to support my family, live in the lifestyle I want to live and have the things I want. But they're doing this, but I've got to do that. And how do I leave that? And I'll be the first to admit, it's easy to say, just quit your job and go on. Yeah, that's not a good option. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've had people tell me going through the things with my mom, well, you should just quit your job so you can stay home and take care of your mom. And I'm like, I'm 59. Quitting my job at 59 is not an option for me at this point. I'm trying to make sure I have enough to where I can do whatever I'm going to do when I decide I don't want to punch a clock every day. You know, and it's easy to say for a lot of people, if you have money or if you have things, well, just go do this. And they're not realizing their implications for that has, and that makes it harder on Christians because it creates the cognitive dissonance where your brain's saying one thing, your faith is saying another, and you're trying to marry the two together.
What I think the place to start is with validation. I think the human is human nature. That is what's difficult. It is human nature to basically say, oh, I'll quit your job because I am not thinking about that. It's just coming out of my mouth from, you know, no brain filter right there. Yeah. Oh, what, you know, quit your job or do this. The easiest solution, you need the caregiver needs empathy. He needs empathy and conscious empathy and the need to validate. You know, we're all dads, we're all parents. I mean, when we were kids, our parents did this to us. You know, they get moody, they get depressed. Oh, I'm depressed. My buddies are all going to the Bahamas or the Mexico and I'm not going with them. And you want to say, you got nothing to be depressed about. But that's kind of the wrong way. The way is just to basically say, acknowledge they're depressed. You might think that is not really to be depressed about. But the point is that they're feeling this. Mm-hmm. And they just need someone to say, yeah, I'm sorry. Or even if that happened to me, I think I'd be depressed too. You don't have to fix it. You don't have to go buy them a ticket to Cancun, which is what some parents immediately do. Oh, I got to fix this.
Right. After our break, I want to address the let's fix it problem.
Yeah, and well, yeah, they want to fix it, but I think it comes down to starting the point where putting yourself in that person's shoes and understanding the dilemma they might be in, the trouble they might be in, the unhappy choices and consequences they still may face, and sometimes it just means acknowledging that with them and saying, yeah, this sucks.
Excellent. And with that, we're going to go ahead and take our first break. This is No Church Answers. We'll be right back.
Hey, pastors and church leaders. Are you looking to create an exciting program that will attract, engage, and inspire men in your congregation? Book a live Man Up Spiritual Oasis podcast for your next men's ministry event. Called Authentic, Gritty, and Unexpectedly Funny, Man Up has been delighting podcast listeners since 2017. We're not pastors, just regular guys willing to talk about scripture and how we can apply it to our personal faith journeys. Man Up is a refreshing alternative to predictable motivational speakers, offering your audience a chance to connect with everyday Christian men who don't settle for routine Sunday school answers. Interested in learning more? Visit man-upspiritualoasis.com or contact Bill Cox at liveshow@manupmedia.org. And now, back to the fellows of Man Up.
And welcome back. This is No Church Answers. We are talking about A Cry for Freedom, Grace That is Still Amazing. And this particular lesson was written by Scotty Swingler. He's our pastor of students here at Sugarland Baptist Church. And we are talking about kind of being in the world and kind of segmented off into working ethics kind of thing, talking about Robert and of course, Steve's example about pharma. And I had a sister that worked for Enron. I don't know if any of you know about the crooked
smartest
E.
Smartest guys in the room.
About the crooked E. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my sister is one of the smartest people in the room, a very intelligent CPA. And as a matter of fact, she was one of the ones that basically about locked the door. And I would call her as I was reading in the paper of the different findings and what was going on with the skilling and all the rest of them there. And I'd call her up and I'd say, Mary, how's it going? She goes, great. I haven't been fired or indicted yet. And, you know, although I think that response is funny and witty, it's kind of telling of how we in society sometimes get ourselves pigeonholed. And that's a crack. I mean, she was making great money there. And I have no idea I have no doubt that she was in no hurry to get out, and she was probably stained with a crooked E on her forehead. And so it does take a little bit of time to evaluate how you are going to work in that situation. Of course, you think it'd be the upstanding way would get, I just quit. I found out about this stuff. This is unethical, and I'm going to quit. Well, you might not financially be able to do that. You find it out, and then, but maybe there's other ways. Maybe there's, work within the system. We might want to change this kind of policy. Did you know this? Or that kind of thing. But you have to find a way as a man to go from being victim to being leader. And I think that is a big part of what this lesson is. Go from victim, but to be the right type of leader. And that's what I got from this lesson.
I'll say that actually, because you're going in a direction where that the personal response.
I like the word he said, a pigeonhole.
The personal responsibility.
I like that a lot. Because before we hit that, okay. Because the pigeonhole, that's a really good example and a really good point of why, how we kind of get into this. And the easy church answers, I'm going to pray for you. You just need to do what's right before the Lord. You just need to. Those become the problems because I'm pigeonholed in a place. And your sister's world is good. I'm going to assume she had a mortgage.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to assume she had car notes.
And kids going to college.
If you've got a job paying what her job was paying, and you've got a mortgage with probably a house somewhere near that. And I'm not going to assume she overbought, but just a normal sized house for that thing with kids in college and car notes and all of the accruing expenses. I'm not saying three houses and all that. Just I'm talking about normal living expenses.
Standard.
Yeah. You can't just up and go, I'm done with this place. I'm quitting. Mm-hmm. And if you think you can, let me tell you, go try to find a job. I won't even say right now, in the last 5 to 7 years, because recruiting in this company is broken, you're going to be 6 months without a job. I don't care how good you are.
There's even more to that, Robert, because people know, I mean, we do know there are people at church, we're a few degrees separate only because this is Houston. There were some people at our church who did work for Enron, who knew people who worked for Enron. And one of the individuals in my ABF group knew Sharon Watkins, who was the whistleblower.
Yes,
she did the right thing. Mm. She has never worked again.
Yeah,
she was hailed as doing the right thing. No other company, because that is the culture. Mm-hmm. They'll hail you as a hero, but they will know that you don't play ball with the corporation. Mm-hmm. And and even though the corporation was breaking the law, and so there's you want to throw your one of your other favorite writers and religious figures, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, The Cost of Discipleship. Now I don't know if Miss Watkins was a Christian or not, but she bore the price of doing the right thing, and there
definitely.
It is a concept. She and
at some level we have to always be willing to accept that price, but. I think the thing I think Paul is talking about this when he says, carry each other's burdens, but be willing to bear your burden. Mm-hmm. It's not as cut and dry and simple and as everyone thinks it is, because it sounds like, oh, just quit your job, you'll find another. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. There are other things that you have to think about as you work through this. And this is where having that faith walk, having that daily exercise in your faith muscle, it helps you make that decision in a way that you can honor God, but at the same time, on some level, try to protect yourself. And it's not a cop out. There's a reality of, I've got to, in your sister's case, Bill, there's a reality of, I've got to be able to take care of my family here.
Right. Well, and the thing about it is, and I really appreciate the show notes that producer gave us, and it kills me. I mean, the title of this podcast is No Church Answers, okay? And one of the biggest church answer is, I'll pray for you, okay? Now, I personally think that you should have a relationship with people that you worship with, okay? Number one. Number two is if you're sharing things with people that deeply that they need to go, I'll pray for you, you should have a relationship with that person. I look at that response not as just a church answer, but as a spare tire. That person has a relationship with you. You say, I'll pray for you. And as you pray for him, maybe you'll get an inspiration or something will come to you on how to actually help them get the real tire back on the car. The spare tire is only good for a few miles, and that's what prayer is going to do. It's going to prop you up while you need to be propped up from someone else. But the fruit of the prayer and the faith of the people that you're interacting with, that's what's going to get your regular tire fixed back on your car and your spare in the trunk, if that you guys follow that.
Oh yeah, 100%. But, and it's a cop out if you're saying I'll pray for you has kind of an answer. But I agree with you. If you had the relationship and you're talking about things and you know people, and you know this is somebody you've been worshiping with, attending with for years, the I'll pray for you is not a cop out. The I'll pray for you is a commitment that A, I'm going to pray for you.
B, I'll think about it.
B, yes. I'm going to do something about it, and I'm going to approach you where I can and help you where I can.
It's kind of like you have a problem, you've confided in me, I don't have the answer now. I'll pray about it. Maybe I will.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, you know, the prayer should be, Lord, help Steve and help me help Steve.
Yeah. And this is where carry each other burdens comes into play, because that's literally what that passage is talking about. Is we're helping each other as we go through, and then here's my little spin on, has each one carries his own burden? So Steve is responsible for his burdens, but if I say, Steve, I'm going to pray for you, oh, guess what I'm now accountable for? Praying for Steve's problem, helping Steve get through his problem, and that's where the dual side of the relationship comes in, as Bill's talking about.
But this is, and I do want to get to this, because Every week you say, Bill, you say you urge our listeners to join a church, a Bible-based church. One of the reasons men should join church is because it's an opportunity to build friendships with people other than people in your workplace. Now there are studies show that you can have a certain amount of close friendships, but it's I'll testify to this myself. I'm sure it's not the greatest day when you wake up and suddenly realize all your friends are in your workplace, because that's a very tentative situation. Someone's going to, you leave. I really hate where somebody, I hope you don't do it I can't imagine doing it. We're all a family here at Acme Corporation, and you're not a family.
You will fire me when you need the
bottom line. You will fire me the moment I become of less value to you. Let's be real. Now, I can't. I know it's a bad attitude if I say that to your face, but we both know it's true.
I'll tell people that from the beginning. That look, we all work together. We're all working towards a common goal. But guess what? It's working.
You go home
working together
at the end of the day.
And but the other part is, I'll admit up front, a lot of our relationships are there because of this. But guess what? Don't let that be your primary stuff.
Yeah, and because your friends at work still have, they're in a professional situation. They have other things going on. I can be a friend with Bill because we just get along because we have certain things in common. One is that we're Christians. But and with Robert here, because we're both, he gave a lot of money to UH. I'm giving one student's worth to 4 years. So we're connected.
Yeah. I only did one kid. The other one went to Texas Tech. He's the black sheep of the family.
Oh, okay. We both have furthered the cause of UH. But no, I jest. But you don't, these friendships are not predicated on the common on a common job goal, and they're worth building, and you're worshiping with these guys, and you're getting to know them better, especially through a Bible study group. Again, Bill urges this every week, and I think you take it seriously, because going, as I said at the beginning, we're made for fellowship. We're not a religion that is individually focused. We are individually saved, but we are part, we are kingdom people and resurrection people. We are built for community, the horizontal part of the cross. We are, and the kingdom works when we are supporting each other, just like Paul says here. So this is the reason, and yes, the strong friendships can form in church. Now, you're not going to like everybody. It's just like any other community. There'll be people you like. In fact, even in a Bible study group, we talk about sharing burdens. There may be people in your ABF who you're really not particularly interested in confiding in, but people who are, or people who aren't. You know, you just know a church, and through working on missions or working on barbecues, that you've come to know, like, and you respect each other. That the point being is that it's one of the best places, and one of the last places, unfortunately, for men to form strong friendships.
Excellent. And with that, we're going to go ahead and take our second break. This is No Church Answers. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Bill Cox, director of Man Up, Spiritual Oasis for Men. We hope you enjoy our show as much as we enjoy doing it. But our ministry needs your support if we are to continue to bring our TV show, our podcast, our live shows to men seeking spiritual refreshment. For as little as $5 a month, you can become a patron of Man Up Spiritual Oasis. Get more details at our page on patreon.com. If you would like to support us directly, you can make a contribution through PayPal at donate@manupmedia.org. All contributions are tax deductible. We're not pastors, just regular guys. So whether you're successful or struggling, we hope to bring you the good news of God's saving grace as we share our own spiritual journeys. Please consider supporting Man Up and No Church Answers today.
And welcome back, everybody. This is No Church Answers. This is our podcast number 324. And one of the things that that I wanted to hit on, absolutely, loneliness is at epidemic proportions for men. I had a boss. I'll just say his name is Jeff, because, well, it's Jeff. And you had value as long as you were making Jeff money. And if you did not make Jeff money, I don't think he would remember your name. And honestly, I thought that was kind of a slap in the face, but then I realized, you know what? That might be a real honest relationship. You know, you're here to work, and if you're not going to work and produce, there's really no reason for you to be here. Although it was a little bit cutthroat. I mean, I certainly saw the validity in the way he treated people. But here's the thing about church that kind of, I don't want to say bothers me, but I just wonder about people. You might come for a while. Do you really want to be a member? Do you really want to be one of these people? Honestly, it seems like, and like I said earlier, you know, easiest club to get in, but the hardest club to stay in, because you get in because everybody's all welcoming. Yay, come on in. Yeah, we're so glad you're here. We're going to share your burden and stuff. And then when you make the first slip up, oh, dude, you're not a Christian. You need to get out the door. And, you know, it's like we let you in, but if you don't turn out, we boot you out quickly.
Well, and it's beyond a sin. It's, you know, if you're not, I'll say, monetarily successful, there are some churches that look at you and say, well, there must be some sin in your life, so there's something wrong with you. Continue.
Well, that's true. And but there's also people that go into it haphazardly, and they, I don't want to say go in for the wrong reasons, but what do you hope to get out of it? I mean, really?
You know, I want to save all that thought for next week, because my hope is we have Scotty here. You know, he's a busy guy. He's hoping to come. But I invite our readers to go back, our listeners to go back and check out Sugar Land Baptist Church's YouTube of we are in Holy Week now, so happy Easter. This is dropping a couple of days after Easter. I'm glad we're talking about resurrection people, and we'll continue to do that. But our pastor, Taylor Sandlin, gave a great sermon, and
last
he started
week.
With that. Yep. Why are we Christians? Why did we become Christians? And yes, Bill, you're absolutely right. This is tough stuff. You just don't, you know, I think at some point, we believe flat out that God, the God who is presented to us in the Old Testament, that God, that personal God, became human and died on a cross and rose from the dead with the express purpose of creating a way to communion with God the Father. The whole Trinity, I'm not going to try to explain it, but that's it. And so, yeah, Bill, you get people, you walk around some churches, yeah, I'm here because I want to be a better person. And, you know, I don't really believe that rose from the dead thing. It's kind of all symbolic, isn't it? It's like all a metaphor for renewal, and, you know, it's the spring and all that. No. But to take that one step further, and again, maybe next week, that has to change your life. You have to think about that reality. If we are buying into the truth, what is the truth? According to the Bible, Jesus was God. Jesus died on the cross. Jesus resurrected. He established his kingdom here, and he is in charge, even if it's messy down in this corner of the kingdom. This kingdom, this part, this world has been redeemed. So that's and that's also part of it. That's why we have to live in neighborly fellowship, because everybody either is being redeemed or has the potential of being redeemed. You cannot be a Christian and walk around saying this world is lost. You know, I'm just waiting for them to call me home because down here is just corrupt. If you're walking around saying that, that's a heresy, because the Bible tells us the world is redeemed. So, and you are a redeemed person by accepting the gift of Christ's atonement, or Christ's crucifixion and resurrection. And so what are you going to do with that? Like in the Untouchables, what are you going to do? As Sean Connery said.
Yeah, well, let me theologically set something up here when we're talking about the access to God. And mm-hmm. So if you believe in the Jewish Old Testament, there was the Ark of the Covenant, which is where the fragments of the Ten Commandments were, along with the jar of manna. And once a year, the priest, it was kept in the Holy of Holies, first in the tabernacle, then in the temple. Once a year, and only once a year, one priest could go in and sprinkle the blood of the sacrifice onto that. By the time of Jesus' crucifixion, the ark was gone, but they still honored that tradition with the temple and the Holy of Holies. And there was a curtain that separated the Holy of Holies from the rest of the temple complex. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all three tell us that upon Jesus' death, the curtain of the temple that separated the Holy of Holies, the presence of God is what that symbolized, from the rest of the temple, was torn in two, because the world was opened up to the presence of God at that moment. And that right there changes the equation completely. And that is really why when people talk to me about, yeah, I go to church, it'll make me a better person. Yes, it will. But I really don't believe whatever. You're missing the point, dude. Completely missing the point. because you do, it's our faith and works argument, and I love doing this. You don't do the works so that you believe. You believe, and that makes you want to do the works. Your belief is what makes you a better person. Your being a better person isn't what validates mm-hmm. your belief. And I think that is where a lot of Christianity gets wrong, because what we want to do in essence as Christians, because we live in a check the box, mm-hmm. I got to go through society, I've got to meet all the things, and that makes me a Christian. No, because I'm a Christian, I need to, want to, should do, should really think about, should influence, and should want to do these things.
Well, that's like what I said, you know. There's
absolutely.
It's easy to get into the club, but there should be a major transformation in a person when they get in the club.
Or over time, because I'm a big believer in faith, just like our lives are journeys. Mm-hmm. And that's right. One reason why we need to have a lot of grace, particularly, and I'm going to just say it this way. There are people that a young couple will join a church. Well, they're not married, and they're living in sin, and they have a kid, and oh my God, blah, blah. Okay, here's the deal. They grew up in families where dad was on wife number three, mom was on husband number two, but has already divorced him, and she's lived with four different guys, dad's lived with four different girls, in the interim between all the other, they haven't had any other models. We're not in the world where everybody grew up in church and you did all this anymore. So we have to have some grace when they walk into our congregations towards them and help them understand that, yeah, okay, you're there. Let's talk about how do we get you here and do it in a, and this is where we come back into gently and carrying one of the burdens. How do we do it in a way where we can have this discussion? Because the world is telling them one thing, and it's not the days of old in the South where everybody woke up, went to church, and you left. The average person today, less than 10 to 20% of the population or less, actually attend church.
So the fact is that person walked into church.
Yes.
They're looking for something. Yes. And there you are, Bill. You know, you welcome it in, but then help. That's a good way to put it. Help them to get where really, not just where God wants them to
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
They knew enough to, or were drawn enough in. And they may have come
for our barbecue.
Yes. Spare the lecture.
Yeah.
And listen.
Yeah. Look, you know, why did you come in? What's going on in your life right now? Why are you here? Really, that's fascinating. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Before we get to our wrap up and takeaways from this particular lesson, I'm reminded of a deacon who had me over. His name was, I don't remember it, but hopefully by the end of the story, I'll remember his name. Great guy. And he had my wife and I over because Beverly, it was a head of some deacon committee. And he said, I was so honored. I've been asked to be the head of the deacon committee by Pastor Phil, and I've been divorced twice. And he talked with us at length at that dinner about how it changed his life being asked when he was a documented sinner. That's what he called himself. I'm a documented sinner. And Joe was his name. That's right. Great guy. And that right there just goes to show me you're going to have moments of opportunity to restore somebody. And I think you'll recognize it when you have that, when you have the insight, when you have the blessing, and when someone's coming with you a problem and the light goes off and the Spirit just gives you what you know is the absolute right answer that person needs at that point in time. And Phil nailed it with Joe. And I have no doubt It changed his life. And I think a big problem that churches have, a person becomes a Christian, you know, they get in this club and they want to do good. And they want to do good to everybody. They want to take care of everybody. No, no, no. You're not growing a whole field of corn. You might only have one or two plants, but that might be an important one. And we've said many times before, it's the spoke in the wheel. And you don't know where that wheel is going to continue to roll. But you do know this, the spoke that you helped create and be strong is going to have a major part in that. And with that, we're going to go around the room and get some takeaways from the fellas and start with Professor Koshu.
You know, carry each other's burdens, but do so in a gentle manner. And be willing to really, as Christian men, we are called to be leaders and we are called to reach out and really do the things that we need to do as men and leaders. And we're called to do that, but remember how we do it is just as important as what we do. And I think that is where we've missed it so many times as Christians. So that we can really show the light of Christ to the world, living as what we call resurrection people. That's really what we're called to do.
Excellent. Steve Titch.
Well, restoration is probably one of the big countercultural things the church will do. That's a great story about Joe, because Joe never expected that. Joe was given a leadership position where he was like the prodigal son. He was hoping, I'll come back to church. I've been divorced twice. Maybe they'll let me handle the collection someday. Maybe they'll let me, you know, set up the tables for the Sunday after service lunch. And here he is having the senior pastor ask him to take a leadership position. This was like the father going out, running out to the son, draping him with the robe and giving him the signet ring. Did not, you know, you are restored to being my son. The important thing is that that's what would, Jesus' mission was one of restoration. In this culture, I think we've always, humans love to cancel each other. You know, the gossip, oh, let's ostracize him. It always was there on a community basis. Now, because of the internet, it's become the latest hobby. Let's see who we can cancel. Because in 2005, they said something marginally racist or caricature-like. And so, therefore, let's ruin his career forever of something he did in high school. And you can look out onto social media and see the glee this is done with. Let's all pile on. Restoration is the exact opposite of that. And to keep Joe going, Phil said, we're going to forget all that. That's all in the past. That's happened. Water under the bridge. You are a Christian now. You are restored. And to do that, you know, it sounds good, but you're putting somebody back, in some cases, in a place they might not deserve. But that's what the whole mission of Christ was. We did not deserve this salvation, this restoration with God. That's, you know, talk about, that's where the joy in Christianity is. We are restored. So why are we like the servant going out and beating up the people who owe money? We are to extend that grace, and that grace includes, to a point, I say, restoration, or at least acknowledging that person is as much in the image of God as me. There are always consequences. I'm not saying you can't evade those, but it's saying that person is still loved by God, and therefore I, as part of the kingdom, I have to understand that. And that has to, at some degree, color the relationship I have with him or her.
Excellent. And I just wanted to add one thing. When you can help, knowing that is as important, maybe more important, than who you can help. So thanks so much for tuning in. This is No Church Answers. And once again, thanks so much to all our sponsors and supporters. We totally appreciate it. On behalf of our producer, Mr. Steve Titch, Michael Cropper, who's out on location, Robert Koshu, my name is Bill Cox. Our podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. So please rate it and leave a review. And if you have a question or comment, go to our Facebook page or nochurchanswers.com and post it there. And if you're unable to attend a church, well, shame on you. Check out Sugar Land Baptist Church streaming service. It's on Facebook, YouTube, and sugarlandbaptist.org. Starts Sundays at 9:45 a.m. And when you are ready, we encourage each and every one of you to join a local Bible-based church. Why local? So you'll go and participate. And find the small group ABF, Adult Bible Fellowship, or Sunday school class that you can join for small group discussions like this. And find one that is men-only. If there isn't one, you can start one. And take North Church Answers, and we'll talk with you again next week.
You've been listening to No Church Answers, the weekly Christian podcast for men. Tell us what you think. Leave a comment or a review. Want to know more about us? Then visit nochurchanswers.com and our Facebook page. Check out our video series on our YouTube channel. You can also become a patron of No Church Answers by visiting our Patreon page. No Church Answers is a production of Man Up Spiritual Oasis Media, which is solely responsible for its content.